What is up, everybody? Welcome to the pilot episode of the Greek Geek Podcast. The market is coming off an absolutely crazy week, so this should be a fun one. I'm your host, Jason Byrne. The market insiders got absolutely wrecked last week by the Wall Street Bets Redditors, and we're going to break down exactly how that happened. I'm joined today by my good friend and neighbor, Paul Van Orden, who joins me from about 500 feet away. Paul, what's
happening, guys?
And conversely, on the other side of the world, from about 9,000 miles away in the Philippines, I got my good buddy Michael Simmons on the show.
Howdy.
All right, Paul. So early in the week, you pinged me. I had not heard about it yet. You were like, hey, man, you got to check out what's going on with this Wall Street Bets with GameStop. And of course, I was blown away and was trying to figure out what the hell happened. But can you kind of summarize how that went down from your perspective?
Yeah. So I've been actively trading my own stocks for about 4 years, not much of a day trader till recently, kind of wanted to get more into it. So I've been watching the stocks the last 6-9 months to see what's going on. And this past week or so, I noticed GameStop, some talk, some chatter of what was happening. And then about last Monday, Tuesday, I started actively watching each more. And essentially what happened is a bunch of big hedge funds, mostly Melvin Capital, started it, shorted GameStop big time. And once everyone kind of jumped on that bandwagon, it was shorted by 130% of its stock. And they were talking in the news how GameStop's dead. It's the next Blockbuster. So the Reddit boys took offense to that. And some of the, you know, computer guys were ticked off at that and said, hey, let's all 2 million of us in this group go buy 10 stocks each of GameStop and drive this up. So it just wrecks their shorts. Kind of started as a game.
And we see this absolutely crazy move on the screen. Like, it went from $4 a stock about 6 months ago to, you know, almost 500 at the peak.
Yeah. So I last Tuesday, Wednesday, I saw it get to like $40, $50. And I'm like, should I jump in on this? And I was kind of like, I'm not much of a day trader, but I was kind of dabbling it. I had some money. I made some good money in crypto the last 6 months with the big jumps that I've just been sitting there. And so I was debating getting on. So I was watching it more and more. And then it took another big jump because Instagram, Facebook, everyone was talking about it. The shorts were trying to get out of their money, creating a short squeeze. And Melvin Capital had 300 plus million supposedly in it. And so they were holding on and it just kept ticking, ticking, ticking. Like you said, took off. And so I got in at $90, got most of it out at $250 and have That's a few nice shares return. Left. Have a few shares left just to see how it goes the next week or so.
For those who don't know, like what does a short squeeze mean? I zoomed in here on this screen. We can see some of these numbers that give you an indication of exactly what that is. And that the key is right here. Okay. We've got, this is the number of shares outstanding and the shares in float, which is about 65 million. The short float is 121%, which it was actually higher than that. So what that basically means is there's more people shorting the stock than there actually is stock available, which creates this huge demand cycle. And when people buy it and hold it, they can't buy the stock to cover their short, and the price goes up and up and up and up until somebody finally sells it. So that's kind of the impetus for how that went down. I'm going to pass it over to you, Michael. You had a crazy ride with it as well.
Yeah, I started a little bit earlier. Like, I've been following Wall Street's bets for a while, so I've been kind of just seeing what's going on with it and just been a part of the community kind of in general. And I've seen a lot of like hype stocks come and go. So when it first started getting hyped, I didn't really think anything of it. I was like, okay, just here's another one. But it started getting like more and more. And then I started seeing like, you know, people posting their due diligence. And actually the thing about it is like, it's actually a pretty, you know, it's got a lot of, GameStop has a lot of nostalgia for a lot of, people my age. And so, and then there was a lot of good news that came out with it. Like, you know, Ryan, I think his name was Ryan, came in and invested like 8 or 9% of the company.
From Chewy,
the guy from Chewy, exactly. So people, you know, took a lot into that because Chewy had actually Amazon as a competitor. So like a lot of Melvin and other hedge funds, like the reason why they were shorting was because basically they thought that you know, people aren't going to GameStop anymore. They're not going to the store to do anything. We got hit with a pandemic, so they can't. And they're just buying Xboxes and whatever on Amazon instead. And they'll just buy games on the digital stores. So, yeah, like, all the games are why would it even now. Exist? Yeah, like, why would it exist, right? Like, there's actually a lot of logic behind their argument in shorting it. But, you know, you shouldn't even really be allowed to short up to 140%. That seems crazy to me. But yeah, basically, like, once Ryan came in, invested a bunch of his own personal capital, and then, you know, he's got a history with Chewy.com, which actually was kind of had Amazon as a competitor, and he took them as, you know, turned that into a very successful company. So he's got history of doing this before, and he's on the board of directors. And later, after it started getting, you know, more and more hyped and the price was actually going up, he actually, like, doubled down on it and then reinvested even more. So that obviously added fuel to it.
Yeah,
and
but come on, the valuation now. I mean, no matter what he might bring to the company, it's not this.
Oh, yeah. Well, now it turned from, like, okay, this actually looks like a really good company to, okay, this is a meme. And it became like the 99% against the 1% is really what happened. They were like, yeah, so look, if you're going to short it
a little bit earlier in the month and we see this, you know, the level at, you know, $20 to $40, okay, maybe you can say the $40, maybe, right? It's still crazy 10x move, but. Then it just went berserk. Yeah. Paul, what's your feeling as far as, like, how long this thing's going to ride out?
You know, I thought Friday was going to be the big day all week. You know, I just was pitching Friday. And then with the craziness with Robinhood, Webull, and these others pulling purchases and only letting you sell, I mean, that changed things. It took that huge drop. And I think some of the shorts got their money back because it went from, like, 136 down to the 120s. But the Redditors and the people online aren't going to let this fly. And they were finding other ways to buy it and kept it pushing. And it got back to the three, I think it's at 325 right now. And so I really think you'll see this week, it will take another jump probably into the 500-600s. I don't know if it's going to hit the thousands like people are saying, but it's not out of the realm of possibility, depending what happens with these big firms and what these brokers let you do. You know, I know E-Trade and Fidelity haven't restricted it at all, but the Robinhood, you know, I read that on Friday, 50% of Robinhood users had bought GameStop stock in the last 5 days.
Well, Robinhood's going to lose a lot of customers to this too.
Oh, yeah. Robinhood's done.
I'll keep them for my crypto until they go out of business, but once this rides over this, I'll transfer everything else. Once I have some time to transfer all my money out and not miss out on anything, I'm done with Robinhood. It cost me a significant sum of money.
Here's the thing. I mean, think about how long this is going to last. Like, I thought for sure this was going to be done. You know, we're hearing on CNBC how everybody's, like, gotten out of their short positions. But I think it was at, like, 135% short float. And if you look at this now, it's still at 121. There's still a lot of people that have to get out from under this. And this is going to
raise millions of dollars. They're telling people they're out. People are telling people they're out, but they're not out. It's so hard to get out in the 100 to 300 range because they're going to eat so much. So they're reinvesting to try to hedge their bets. They're not out.
What are you thinking, Michael?
No, that's exactly right. Like, they're not out. The news is kind of taken over and they're basically trying to promote the idea that they're out because they want everybody else to get out. And I'm sure they're being paid to say those kinds of things. But yeah, I mean, we can see the numbers. They're simply not out. So they're trying to drive the price down. They're trying to scare it. You know, I think the Thursday drop, that was where I lost my big chunk, unfortunately. But I'm still in the positive, so it's all good.
No, but you did really well. You were in, you were out, you're taking profits.
Yeah, I started at like 40. Once I saw it going from, you know, the early, like, 6 months ago or whatever, going from like 12 to up to 20, and then I saw a double up to 40. That was where my first jump in was. And then after that, it kind of took a little longer than I expected. And I'm really used to very short term trades. So when it was taking longer than I expected, it dipped right after I bought, of course, because that's life. And so I held longer than I was comfortable with holding. And then I ended up selling my 40 position at about 44 just to get out of it. Because at that point, I had been in like a day. And I just wasn't comfortable with it. And then it jumped up to 70 like the next day, or 78. And I jumped back in at 70. And then I held those all the way up to like 150. So I doubled like right from there, which was awesome. And then I was able to hold on to that capital for a while until I started kind of trying to just sort of day trade it, you know, because at that point call options were so expensive because there's so much implied volatility at that point that call options are like not even worth getting into. And so I just was day trading the shares, made a few successful trades, built up my sort of profit on the top. And then, yeah, Thursday hit. And Thursday, I was buying in the pre-market dip. It dipped all the way down. I was kind of sizing in my position like as that whole dip was coming into the market open. And so I ended up getting a 354 average on that buy-in. But then once we hit right before market open, as soon as the market opened and I saw we were starting to tick up and I saw the orders coming in, I just put in a massive order and got in like at 234. And then we spiked all the way up and I was just looking at these crazy huge numbers and I should have just closed my positions. I just knew I should have and I didn't, you know, I didn't.
It's always, I was like, maybe this is top afterwards, right?
Right. And so that trade, I actually ended up eating it because the problem was, is it came down and it was looking like it might come back up and that was when they tanked it. And so I was able to get out and break even on that trade, but my trade with the 354 average, I ended up losing on that one. So balancing it all out, I'm still up in the green pretty well. I've got enough to play with. I'm happy with it, but I was way, way up. And that what happened was is on Thursday, you know, it was like the biggest drop in that anybody's ever seen, at least that I've ever seen for sure, going from 450, 400 and whatever it was down to, you know, 115 in like 30 minutes and being halted the whole time. So you couldn't even put in an order to exit your positions. And then with Robinhood playing all their game, it was just Thursday was absolute madness. And I think that's what ended up with creating Friday to be like this very low volatile, low volume day, very like pretty much just straight across on Friday. And everybody was expecting it to be big because Friday was the day that all of the weeklies and the monthlies closed for a lot of call options because it was January 29th. So everybody was expecting a big day on Friday. But now that it's gotten like so much publicity and people are putting up, you know, billboards in Times Square and we've had the weekend for things to calm down, I'm kind of wondering if like everybody's taken this weekend to create their Webull accounts and their accounts with whatever broker they want to use and transfer some money over and find a way that they can join in. So I'm waking up at like 1 a.m. Monday morning Pacific time. So basically 4 a.m. Eastern. And I'm just going to be watching and seeing what's happening. And if we start to see a run up, I'll probably jump in a few times and see if I can make some money on the way up. And if we see a dip, I'm just going to load up.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I honestly don't know what's going to happen because, I mean, I feel like this could almost wreck the economy in some ways, at least in a small part. I mean, if these companies lose, you know, tens of billions of dollars, that's going to have an effect.
Well, and the interesting thing is
long-term effect on the market in general, right?
Like, yeah.
We're never going to be the same after this. There's going to be changes. I don't know what, but there's going to be changes.
Like pull up the FinViz map. It's pretty interesting, the timing of all this, because when you look at the FinViz map over the last, like just their map in general, if you look at that over the last like 2 days, we've dropped like a massive amount in the last 2 days. And I can't help but wonder if you can just click map there.
I don't know if FinViz as well as you do.
Yeah, just click in the navigation there in the blue bar. Just click map next to screener or maps.
Where's that? Sorry. Up,
in the gray screen above GME, right above the GME logo.
Yep. There you go. But yeah, this kind of tells the story. And I know that I'm definitely a part of this because I certainly sold a bunch of SPY and VOO and a whole bunch of ETFs just to wish I could show you, but it's next to like home news screener maps. But yeah, like this really tells the story and this, it's been like this for 2 days. You know, I definitely was a part of this cause I sold shares in a bunch of things to clear out my Webull account so that I had some capital just ready to sell or ready to buy into GME. And I can't help but wonder how many other people are doing the same thing. So
yeah, I mean, and it's crazy because like Microsoft, you know, Apple, they both had great quarters, but they're all going down, losing a bunch of value.
Yep.
I mean, so in some ways, maybe this is an opportunity to get into some of those positions.
I think absolutely. Well,
you know, after the GameStop thing went down, the Redditors were pivoting into some other stocks, and they were going Nokia, AMC, and also like lesser known shares like Naked. So Naked was this brand that was almost going to be delisted. It was like 50 cent valuation per stock. And so they rallied behind this and drove it all the way up over $3. And you got in at that at what, 121?
Yeah, 121 I got in and got out at like 3, and then I got back in at 174, and that's where I'm at right now, where I got back in at sitting on it. But I'm playing with house money. Robinhood's hard to see. I haven't looked that one up today. We'll see where that one's at. But it's been I wanted to sell again, but Robinhood froze up on it, wouldn't let you do anything when it got to like 220 the other day. But I'm in at 174 on house money, so I'm just hoping that's one that picks up. Nokia, I took a hit. I wasn't going to get on Nokia, but I'm a big Dave Portnoy fan, and he's picked some really good winners, so I follow him, and he went in large, like $1 million on Nokia, and that was Wednesday night, 10 minutes before close, and then Thursday,
Nokia. Yeah, I never understood the Nokia trade. Like, I mean, it's a decent company. The fundamentals actually aren't terrible, but if you look at the short float, it's only 1%. I never understood how they expected to have a short squeeze on Nokia. It didn't make sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, I, the only reason I got in that one because of the talk. So I thought I was going to get a lot of buy because of the talk and then the Dave Portnoy side of it. The ones with higher shorts, I did get in on Express super early at $3 a share and sold half at like 14 and kept the other half. So it's still at five. What is it right now? Was it $5? I think it closed on Friday around that. I don't know where it's at right now. It's bouncing around. But and then I got in. You told me about FOBU, and I got in with. I know you bailed out pretty early on it, but I'm
made
still
a little money on it, not much.
Sea Express. So I'm still double with what I have left there, and I think that's one that's going to take a big rise. If I remember right, this is like 60% shorted shares, if I remember right. But Express, FOBU, and then I got in on Nokia, Naked, and then I kind of hedged my bets with buying in some silver and gold stocks, thinking people are going to jump on those. That's and the next one, they've huh? done, they're not going to have some big jumps, but they had a 5% jump Thursday and Friday when everyone else was kind of bailing on everything else. I think they dipped back in those markets.
Yeah. The Silver Trust is one of the next ones they're talking about. We can see what that's done over the last 5 days. You know, it's had a pretty decent pop, but hasn't really run up yet. A lot of people are saying if you get in the pre-market tomorrow on Monday morning, like this might be the one that you want to jump into. For me, I'm an investor. I look at long-term companies. I look at fundamentals and I buy and I hold for years. I got caught up in this whole thing. And I'm getting a little itch to be like Mike and be like Paul and do some investing. But I got burned on AMC. I'm not going to lie. So I bought AMC around $20 and kind of took a bath, but I'm going to hold it. I'm going to see what happens because, AMC still has not 120% float, but it does have a 43% float. So maybe there's some hope for me to make my money back at least, or maybe better. We'll see.
I think so. I mean, the thing about it is like one of the reasons why I was interested in GameStop is because there's always going to be hype stocks, right? And there's going to be a lot of them that are distractions and most of them are going to do hardly anything at all. But the thing I like about AMC and GameStop is that like they're actually good companies, regardless of numbers. Put all that aside. Like, how many times have we all been to an AMC theater? How many times have we all gone to GameStop? You know, but Nokia, not really the right demographic for it, I think.
You know, you'd be surprised. I've made a lot of money on Motorola because they pivoted into other things. They're not just phones anymore.
But, and BlackBerry as well. BlackBerry, I mean, I didn't know until this week all the stuff that BlackBerry does besides their phone
and
cell. Well,
they're moving to security and software now. Security. Here's my hope, right? As you're just saying, it's still a good company. They have enough cash to survive another year through the pandemic. Maybe people go back to the movie theater. And if we look historically, the price, even where I bought it at $20, is not historically that high, right? It's been there and well above before. So, you know, maybe it's some hope for me, even if the short-term trade doesn't work out, maybe I can turn it into a long and make it good. I want to pivot a little bit and let's talk about crypto. And this is also, something that's new for me. I know, Paul, you've dabbled with it for a while. Michael, you've got pretty deep into it. What's up with Dogecoin?
You want to take it? Go for it.
I don't want to touch it, but you go.
So I'm a sports guy, and I hang out. I'm a big Utah Utes fan, and their rival is BYU Cougars. And I didn't know what Dogecoin was, but I was on the message board. I think it was Tuesday with all this going on in GameStop, and someone wrote, Elon Musk cryptocurrency, buy some Dogecoin. And so I went and bought $500 at 0.8 cents just for shits and giggles. And then, but I didn't even think about it. I didn't even look at it. And then by Thursday, it was at like 2 cents a share. I'm like, the heck is going on with this? And so I'm like, all right, let's have some fun. And I bought 150,000 shares thinking, all right, I mean, it's such a small amount of money. If this does do anything, you know, you start thinking in your head, if this goes to 10 cents, look how much I made, or a dollar, if it turns into Litecoin, holy cow, or Ethereum, like you're one of those millionaire guys, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I bought 150,000 shares, and the same day,
like nothing.
Yeah. Which, well, I mean, it was like $3,000, you know, but a little under $3,000. But in 2 hours, I doubled my money. I'm like, all right, I'm cashing out what I bought in, and I'll leave the rest in. And it just starts going off. And so then I'm like, all right, I'm going to buy $1,000 more. This could really go off. And then that, you know, that went all the way up to 8 cents a share. So should have sold there before it dropped again. Then it dropped back down, I think, to early this morning to about 2.5, 3 cents a share. And I think it's probably currently, yeah. So now it's at 3.5. So I'm still very significantly up, but I actually think it's a good buy. I think this is going to be a hot week for this stupid thing because of the meme factor. If Elon Musk tweets it again, everyone saw what Elon, I don't know if everyone saw, but Elon Musk just tweeted Bitcoin Friday morning and it went up from 30,800 to 37,900 in like 4 hours.
Did Elon really promote Dogecoin? Because if you look at his tweet, he didn't actually say anything about Dogecoin. He just like posted a picture of a dog.
Yeah, so he posted a picture of the coin. And I guess everyone just took that as it. Again, I saw it on a sports board and it worked out and I've made some good money on it. I've done crypto for 3 or 4 years. I got in on the early rush and got lucky and then hadn't been in it, just kind of dabbled here and there. And then I actually took a bunch of money out of stocks when the pandemic happened, thinking, hey, a lot of these things are going to tank, you know, physical stores, retail store stuff. I had money in that way. I took out of everything. I had Macy's, some different things. I had some decent money in Disney because I knew Disney parks were going to be hurting for a while. And so I took that out and I bought, basically I bought a Bitcoin, 100 Litecoin and like 20 Ethereum in April thinking, hey, if this thing hits, all these crazy people are going to think money's not worth it anymore. They're going to switch over to
let's just appreciate this Doge graph for a minute. Like, this is freaking ridiculous. Like, here it is like under a penny for like forever. And all of a sudden this ridiculous spike where it goes all the way up to 7 cents, which doesn't sound like much, but that's a huge move, right? And it kind of fell off, but still like way above where it was trading. And I don't know. I'm curious what Michael thinks because I'm kind of a pessimist on this. I feel like there's no short selling here, right? I mean, this is just pure like people.
Well, you can trade it into other currencies.
Go ahead,
Michael. It's just, you can trade it into other currencies. It's just, so the interesting thing about like coins is that, you know, there's hundreds of them. I mean, there's so many. There's Bitcoin and Ethereum and Litecoin and Dodd and Cordova and Dogecoin. And like, there's a billion of them, right? So you can trade them against other coins and make money just like a foreign exchange, just like Forex, USD versus the pound kind of thing. But yeah, like, I don't know if you know the history of this coin, but in the early days when Bitcoin was created and became popular, and then people started realizing that like they can make their own coins and make it what be whatever it wants to be, they created this as a meme. So this is literally a meme coin. And it's the reason why it's called Dogecoin is because the Doge meme, like D-O-G-E, is a meme. You can just Google it. But it's quite literally exactly that. It's a meme coin. So if you go to my screen, I have my screen shared on this graph. This is the like multi-year graph of Doge. It does of Dogecoin. It does this regularly. When famous people tweet out that they're going to buy it, it spikes in crazy value, and then every time it falls back into its fair market value, which is next to nothing. So I would advise taking your money as quick as possible because this has happened many, many times in the history of Dogecoin.
Yeah, and here's the dough, just in case
anyone doesn't know
this ridiculous thing. But yeah, that's an interesting graph. So, Paul, what do you think? You gonna make sure you get your money out in time?
I mean, I'm playing on house money. This week, I think, is the week it's going to have another couple spikes, but I doubt I'll own any after Friday afternoon. But I do think with all the internet chatter, there's going to be a lot of internet chatter on everything this week. And if you go online and you Twitter and you look up hashtags, it's still running pretty high on that kind of stuff. So I do think you're going to see a couple more spikes this week. It might get up to as high as 10 cents, you know, at some point this week. But I don't think it's going to go much more than that. And like I said, I'll get out of it at some point this week when I feel comfortable.
Yeah, that's a good way to handle it. If you're already in at such a low figure, then that's a great way to handle it. As far as getting in now, I wouldn't advise getting in at this point, because who knows when it's going to tank.
It's a crazy concept. I admit I don't know much about crypto. I'm not trying to pretend like I know anything, but the fact is, like, anybody can just, I'm going to invent my own currency and I'm going to start trading it. Right. Like, some things that have traction, some history, like Bitcoin and like Ethereum, like, okay, you can actually redeem those and sell them for real stuff. But I just have a hard time thinking like anybody can spin up their own currency and call it worth something. Right. And if they get the Redditors to climb aboard, I guess it is. Right.
Yeah, I mean, there some coins have like their own like specific things that make them special. The thing that's special about Bitcoin is that it's a limited supply, right? Just like gold. That's why it's always compared to gold, is because there are a finite number of Bitcoins that can ever be created. So theoretically, it should hit a value that is eventually fair market and kind of be like a sustainable sort of thing that we can compare other currencies to. So that's what makes Bitcoin kind of special. And what makes Ethereum special is that it can programmatically be tied to anything. So in theory, you can make transactions in Ethereum that can be tied to all kinds of different things and eliminate a whole bunch of hands that typically are in the process of exchanging funds. So like, you know, closing on a house is a very common example with Ethereum. There are a lot of hands that are involved in closing on a house. And it would be, Ethereum has the ability to cut out a large number of those people that really don't have any part in the process other than exchanging money and taking a little bit off the top. So that's one of the reasons why Ethereum is so popular, is because it can be used for so many things. It's just very flexible.
There's a lot of talk of Ethereum being the big year for Ethereum. If you look for some of the big advisors for crypto, and even some of the big investment firms, different things, they're talking about Ethereum going to, you know, some say as high as $20,000-$30,000 a share this year, but a lot of talk of it realistically hitting $5,000-$8,000 at some point in 2021.
Yeah, I'm hanging on to mine.
Yeah, I mean, Ethereum, you can see the graph here. We've had a huge run up in the past, you know, few months, but at the same time, you know, it was there before, right? And so, you know, is it going to drop back down again, or is it the sky the limit here? So you guys seem to be pretty bullish on it, and I hope so, because I just bought some myself this past week.
Interesting
about, you know, Bitcoin, besides the fact that everybody knows it and like this is the all-time graph and it, you know, huge value, is it's going to reduce the amount that it produces in the next year, Michael?
I don't know the actual data.
They're going to cut off what I was reading the other day, they were going to cut off the production. It's going to cut off in half. So when the miners currently make, you know, something like, you know, 12, it's going to go into the 6 or something like that. So the supply is going to hit this cliff. So that really,
yeah, I believe every 4 years it gets cut in half.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, anything else you want to add before we wrap today?
No, it's just been a wild ride. It's been a blast, man. I'm excited
gonna be some fun.
I'm excited.
It's been great talking to both of you guys. It's Paul and I talk all the time. Michael, it's been a minute. Michael and I used to work together at Flow Sports and had some good times out in Austin, and now he's living large in the Philippines. Actually, let me ask you about that. Because people might find that interesting. Just tell us how you ended up in the Philippines.
Honestly, I think it was just kind of a culmination of a bunch of things. I was ready for a change in my life, and my brother already lived out here and was running a company where he basically managed like a whole bunch. I think he had like 100 agents, call center agents doing customer support. And, you know, he had been out here a couple of years at that point, and he just was like, hey, why don't you come out here? And I was just at this point in my life where I was just ready for everything to change. And so I literally sold everything I owned, from my car to my furniture to my computers to everything, my beds, everything in my storage unit, got everything that I owned whittled down into two suitcases, hopped on a plane, came out here. And since then, built a whole big badass office and got this nice huge house. And yeah, I love it, man. It's great out here. Absolutely love it.
I was telling Paul, like, making American wages in the Philippines, it's not a bad life.
Yeah. I mean, I've got like a 5-bedroom, 2-story house with like a lobby, and, you know, you walk in my front door and I've got this nice big spiral staircase that goes up. It's just like big, I mean, beautiful, beautiful house. And I pay $1,000 a month for it, like for the whole entire place. And on top of that, you know, I've got the expat taxes working in my favor. So really I pay like 3% in taxes, because I don't use any of the roads. I don't use any emergency services. I don't use the typical services that taxes go to. So you get a really big break on what you actually make as a citizen living in another country. And then the Philippines doesn't charge you any taxes. So that's really the biggest thing, is expat taxes. I mean, you can make the same exact amount of money on your salary and just instantly double it by moving here, which is pretty, pretty awesome.
I think we got some other people watching this filling out the paperwork right now.
It's been a good decision, I'll tell you.
All right, guys. Hey, I think it went pretty well, first episode. I appreciate you guys joining me. Maybe we'll do it again sometime. Thanks, everybody, for joining. I wish I had a catchphrase to close us, but I don't. Maybe next time. See you later.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you guys.